been in registration since you've been here, and this panel right here is going to draw from the basket and answer the question. JW's gonna be first.
I'm first.
You're first.
Switch with Charles. Charles, switch with me.
Do you prompt clean time?
No.
And by the way, don't ask the question.
How long do people go to meetings? Till they die. Clean.
Another dumbass question.
Hey, maybe the first time through, let them know who you are.
All right, hi everybody, I'm Delana, and I'm an addict. I am here from Massachusetts, and I'm super grateful to be here in Alabama. Okay, my question says, right, they get do you front clean time and something else, and all I see is something about healthy boundaries.
Here we go.
Okay, setting healthy boundaries and not being made to look like the bad guy.
Girl.
So I'm often the bad guy. And this is a really good question for me. So I think what I aspire to do, although of course this is about practicing these principles in all our affairs, not being able to achieve them all the time, my goal is not necessarily to focus on the outcome, but rather the process. And it's not necessarily about being the bad guy, it's about making sure that, you know, discernment. Does it need to be said? Does it need to be said right now? And am I the best person to deliver that information? And when I can love myself enough to know my place in whatever relationship it is, then I'm able to better set healthy boundaries in the process. Just like recovery, the joy is in the journey, not the event.
Good job.
This is really scary.
Hey, my name is Justin. I'm an addict.
Hi, Justin.
Yes, I am traveling here from the Atlanta, Georgia area.
ETL.
Yep, and my question is, have you practiced forgiveness? And if so, how? So my clean date is November 24th, 2009. So I've been here for 15 years, and over that, I've had the opportunity to do this on many, many occasions. And there have been times where I've done it, I don't want to say right, and there have been times where I've done it wrong, and I don't want to say wrong. There have been times where I've done it better, and it's a journey for me. But it's very difficult, man, when you're living life. I'm a human being with character defects, and when someone hurts my feelings, I find it very difficult to forgive immediately because I'm an addict, and our basic text says that we are hypersensitive people. It doesn't say that we're sensitive. It doesn't say that sometimes our feelings get hurt. It says that we're hypersensitive people. What that means to me is that I catch on fire, right? So I have to come to Narcotics Anonymous as my fire department to help me put out the fire. And so Narcotics Anonymous are the ones that have taught me how to forgive through example. I don't inherently know how to make good choices on my own. And so I've had to share in meetings, share with my support group, share with my sponsor. I've had to write about it. And over the years, I've gotten a lot better at forgiveness. And it really falls into realizing that there are drug addicts just like me, that they're people just like me. And that allows me to forgive a little bit easier, man. So,
thanks.
My name is Jennifer, and I'm an addict. And I am here visiting from California. Have I ever committed murder? Like 1,000 bazillion times in my head. Yes.
What?
She pleads the fifth.
I plead the fifth, yes. Right. Allegedly. Right. Only up here. Sorry, let me read this first before I just spout it out.
If you think a sponsor is getting high, do you ask them about it? That's actually an excellent question. Today, I would absolutely ask my sponsor if I thought that she was getting loaded. Jeff was just talking about, we're having sensitive people. That's a very sensitive question. And I think when I read this, I think about, I can ask the question, but I may not get the answer that I desire. It may be something that they're not ready to talk about. When I was new, I probably wouldn't have known if my sponsor was getting high because I was too self-absorbed to even fucking think about anybody else but me, right? Like, we're talking about you, what does that have to do with me, you know? And, but over the years, I've had experiences like this where you've had to ask somebody, like, is this really happening because something's amiss? So I would ask her, but I would have to accept whatever answer I got and move on.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Jim.
You better not get fucking high, by the way.
Right.
Same.
Admin Mike. Hey, everybody. Live in Murfreesboro. All right. What was the hardest thing you went through in early recovery? Simply not use it. I like to use. I spent a year of substitution my first year clean. I substituted with women. I substituted with smoking. Then substituted with eating. My first year clean was at Shelly's, and I hated the food that's so bad, I lost 50 pounds my first year clean. And I did everything outside of myself with one exception. I had to not use no matter what. So, and I did some, I'm gonna tell you this one story, shut up. I got involved, I met one lady my first year clean that was homicidal, suicidal, bona fide schizophrenic, and had a gold badge to the mental health hospital in Nashville. That's how my pick was my first year. So I was gonna make a whole bunch of insane decisions and pay the consequences for them. So early recovery, what I did was not use and fuck up a whole lot of stuff.
I'm an addict in Charles. Live in Las Vegas, hey. Region 51, currently working in Fayetteville, North Carolina. All right. I'm such a dope fiend, I kind of was trying to like read the things before I picked the questions. Okay. How to go about reunification with children once you have a substantial amount of recovery time. Anonymous. All right, I'm an addict, my name is Charles.
Hey, Charles.
So look, I'm gonna tell you right now, I don't have children. And I've never had to reunite with children. I am a child of an addict. But this is what I know, man, is that when I was doing my eighth step, and there were so many amends that had to be made, whether it be with family, whether it be with people that I used with. One of the things that we put next to some of those amends was IGT, in God's time. And so that was kind of one of the things that, and that's what I tell the guys that I sponsor, especially because I can't relate to people who come in here and they say, I wanted to start off on the ninth step.
Yes.
I was waiting for, that didn't make any sense to me because I was a victim when I got here. I was waiting for the step that people lined everybody up and they apologized to me because everybody else was the reason why I was an addict, right? So I didn't try to rush the ninth step. I didn't try to rush to make amends. I didn't try to rush to reconcile with my family, you know, but what I have seen, and I'm really hesitant to say certain things because I feel like this question right here, man, and I hope somebody else who maybe has been through this will pick this question up because I don't have experience, but this is what I have seen, man. I got a friend who was in the fellowship, and she got clean, and she was one of the ones that was blessed to get her children back immediately, like, without any work, and it was something that she wanted more than anything else, but it was something that she could not handle. And, she got her children back from the system, and she abandoned her children clean, and I believe that it was the guilt of abandoning her children one more time clean that made it impossible for her to stay clean any longer. point. So I don't have any experience with this, but I've seen it. But whoever asked this question, I hope that you stay in the process and that you love yourself and that you are there for you so you can then be there for somebody else. So.
Anybody else on the panel, would you like to answer that question? Or?
I don't have experience.
Okay. Let's move on.
You do.
Okay.
Yeah, I had four children when I got locked up, and they were with their mother. They were still using. And my goal was to get out of prison, and I found NA in prison, and I was going to have this wonderful reuniting with my kids, and that did not happen because I substituted the sensation with hookups, people that were willing, but I never. And look, if they were willing, I didn't give a shit who they were. I'm weak. And that went on for the first decade. So my kids had to grow up, escape their mother, and by then, my sponsor had asked me, you know, what was your part in that? And I had to look at what I was doing in the fellowship clean. I wasn't in recovery. I was more in discovery of what doesn't work. And so I started doing some things different. My sponsor helped me with self-acceptance, and I started contacting my kids, and you know, we were grown now, I'm living their lives. And they kept up with me on Facebook and stuff like that. So we had some connection that wasn't imperfect. And when my dad died, my son, all four of my kids come to my house, and I got to tell them my side of the story. And we started a reconciliation that way. Today, I have a wonderful relationship with my kids, my grandkids, FaceTime them, they all live somewhere else. And I have a better understanding of what it takes to be clean and not hurt myself and others. So that, you know, it takes time. It took my sister 2 or 3 years to actually understand that I wasn't going off and committing more felonies. I was actually going off and going to meetings. She asked me one day, just how long are you going to have to go to those meetings? I said, well, just how long are you going to have to go to church? Been going your whole life. But they didn't know what NA was. They didn't know that I was going off and getting spiritually fed and hooking up. I'm on my fourth wife, so getting clean don't make you smart, I promise.
Thank you, J.W.
Why do members of Clean Time don't do service but want to complain about what others are doing? Well, by the way, my name is Francis. I'm an addict.
Hi, Francis.
I have 32 years clean. And I'm from Northern California.
Yeah.
And I've always felt like I've had to be of service in Narcotics Anonymous. And my clean time doesn't exempt me from doing that. Right now I have a regional service commitment. It really stretches me. Fuck. And but you know, like I do service at the group level. I sponsor people. I'm up here being uncomfortable, and you know, like, and I don't know why people with clean time don't do service. And I think that's our purpose in Narcotics Anonymous. You know, like that's the essence of the 12th step. You know, like if you're working the steps, you know, like and you're wanting the spiritual principle, the spiritual awakening. The spiritual awakening is being of service. I went and visited Bill Brooks' grave today, and thanked him for his service. And as I was walking out of the graveyard, there was a guy that was painting little white crosses. And I went down and I talked to him. And what he explained to me that, like, he had a little wood shop in his garage, and he made all these little white crosses, and they were, you know, like, the paint was peeling off, and so he was painting a little roller. And he explained to me that they were baby graves. They were anonymous, you know, like, that just came from the hospital. And I said, "Are you getting paid for this?" He's like, "No, I'm just doing this." And so I think that this is like a normie, like a regular person in the community that's doing service. And I think that's what we aspire to be. And like, it takes work for us to get to that place, right? And so I, like, that's the purpose of service.
Thank you.
Thank you. Closest you've come to using? I don't think I really remember the reason why, but I do remember being in a place where all I wanted to do was use. And of course, if that doesn't tell you that the feeling passes, I don't know what does, because I don't even remember what it was that made me want to use. But I remember, I'll actually go with this one. I do remember a time I had. This is my experience. Welcome to my head. I had 4 months clean. I was in a relationship with somebody, and I overheard my boyfriend on the phone with his friend, and his friend told my boyfriend that he had cheated on his girlfriend, and I was friends with the girlfriend. Mm. So I told my friend that her boyfriend cheated on her, and my husband, and he went to my husband to complain about me getting involved in the drama. And the guy came at me in a meeting and tried to physically assault me inside of a meeting. And that was probably the closest I ever came to using, because I didn't know that it was okay to make mistakes in Narcotics Anonymous. And I thought that, you know, and I'm, you know, whether it was a mistake or not a mistake is really none of my business. What is my business is the way that it made me feel. Getting involved in other people's business, not knowing how to mind my own business, thinking I know what's best for other people, thinking that I'm the, you know, judge, jury, and executioner of other people, you know, all that stuff, thinking that I know what's right for other people, and being the only reason why I felt like I didn't belong here anymore. Nobody ever told me I didn't. Nobody ever said, "Oh, you screwed." It was the shame of my own embarrassment that made me feel like I was different than you, because you guys were so, you had all your shit together. And I had 4 months clean, and I couldn't get my shit together. I didn't fit in with you because you looked happy, joyous, and free. And I was a broken little girl who didn't know how to live life without the use of drugs. So I was better off using. And, you know, so, you know, just to wrap that up really fast, I say this all the time, but, you know, somebody came out and they supported me. And then really quick, I just thought of this. Another time, I don't know if anybody else, you know, I heard a really great speaker last night talk about this, and I'm gonna, you know, this is another time. I don't know if anybody else has experience with this, but I got put on the NA cross and got thrown NA stones and put in NA jail, and they gave me NA handcuffs because of something I did in Narcotics Anonymous and the service thing. So they, you know, the NA police came to arrest me, and if you don't know that I'm kidding, I mean, there's no NA police. But the people that thought they were the NA police at my regional service body called for my resignation because of something that I had done in service. And, you know, I had a commitment at an area level that day, and I said, I'm going to quit. I called all my sponsees. I fired them. I was going to go to church. That's how I was going to stay clean. I couldn't stay clean in Narcotics Anonymous anymore because you guys all sucked. And, you know, I was going to leave, and I fired all my sponsees, and I said, I'm just going to go to one more service meeting. I'm just going to fulfill. I made this commitment. I'm just going to go tonight. And my best friend gave me a hug, and he said he would fight this with me, and that I was never alone, and that regardless of what one or two people said about me, Narcotics Anonymous loved me. And he hugged me, and that was 13 years ago, and I would love to tell you that he's been my rock ever since. He's been my best friend, and I wouldn't be clean if it wasn't for the support of other people. So those are probably some examples of some times I've wanted to use.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
as a newcomer, wow, can I have sex with my sponsor? So these are random. All right. And you guys submitted these. I want to be really clear. Great question. No. Recovery is not a sexually transmitted disease. Okay, so no, I would like to go a little deeper in this, right? Because, you know, the truth is that we come in here really broken people, right? And we're looking for love. And let me rephrase. When I came in here, I felt hopeless, useless, and unlovable. And so when someone showed me love, or what I thought was love, I was all for it, right? And so when you ask the question, can a newcomer have sex with their sponsor? The thing is that it's our responsibility here in recovery to help the newcomer, right? It's our responsibility to make decisions to help the newcomer. And so does this happen? Yes. Yes, it absolutely happens. It's not a ridiculous question and like, this could never happen. Of course it's happened, mm-hmm, right? I think everyone on the panel has probably seen some form of this, you know, shape or form. And the truth is that it is our job to carry the message to the still sick and suffering addict. And when they come in here, it is our job to love them back to life, right? And so, no.
All right, this one is biggest mistake you've made in recovery. Yes. I mean, I got a fucking list. I mean, how long have I got? I mean, come on, I can hear all night. So, right there.
Wrap it up.
I cannot tell you what the biggest mistake is in my recovery. So I kind of live in this vein of like, my friend Douglas says this, I'm a whole ass human being. I'm never not gonna make mistakes in my life, ever. Are there some things that I wish I would have done different? Absolutely, but who I am today, sitting in this chair at this convention, is who I'm supposed to be. So if I wanted to not make any of those mistakes, I wouldn't be where I am now. Now, I will say that one of the things that has become important today that I spent a lot of years not paying attention was taking care of me. And what I mean by that is I got busy in recovery, I got married, I had babies, and I had all of these things, all the things that we love to do around here, get lives, and I forgot who Jennifer was. And I spent a big portion of my recovery worrying about you and how you are and how you're feeling. Are you okay? Are you eating? Are you, you know what I mean? Do you wash your clothes? Do you need ironing? I mean, whatever it was, right? And it did not serve me well in my relationships, right? So today I focus on me, I work on me, you get better, we're all doing better if I'm doing the work. And so if I had to think about how I would have handled these situations in my life throughout recovery, I would have taken care of me so that I could have better relationships with you and the rest of the world.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Please explain, why is it that old timers in the local area constantly prey on newcomers?
Wow.
There's a thing. I don't know. I don't know why another member would prey upon a newcomer. I can speak from my experience this. If I'm exploiting another person, then there's a hole in myself that I need to fill. There's something missing in me for me to take advantage of another member. There's something I'm trying to do if I'm trying to exploit some type of power and control over another member, regardless of how long they've been here. Okay, so the bottom line for this member, regardless of how long I've been here, is to make another member feel welcome, let them know that they're part of the universal program, which means they have a place here, and to help that member find that place. And if they're in a situation where somebody with time is attempting to exploit them, to give them the freedom to find out what is actually going on for them to make a conscious decision for themselves. Well, my sponsor told me I could live with him. Then you might need to look at that. You need to think that. You need to think that. I paid my sponsor's light bill 3 times. Then you might need to look at why you're living with your sponsor and why you took that suggestion. How do you feel and what you need to do to work out that situation? Is that a conflict of interest? Is it affecting you? And for the old timer, I got a situation today with an old timer, and I had to filter how I was going to politely bust him down to the white meat. So I'm going to pull it in, I'm going to pray about it, I'm going to talk to people I trust, and I'm going to approach that older member and ask them a couple of questions. What step you on? Mm-hmm. Are you utilizing sponsorship? What's your problem? How can we help you? Because if that's the situation that you're in and you're using this place to feed an ego that will never be filled, then I strongly suggest you do the things necessary for you to get better. Or there's consequences down the road that I hate to see you go through. But I have to allow you the freedom and the time to figure that out for yourself as well, because every member has their right and their freedom to do so. Thanks.
Yes, can I respond to the previous question?
Absolutely.
Okay, so look, there seems to be some current theme, and it seems to be disruptive and predatory behavior, right? And we have an information discussion topic called predatory and disruptive behavior. And I want to kind of answer, we are supposed to protect the addict, right? And you know who's also an addict is the predator, the person who's doing the predatory and disruptive behavior, man. And I want to speak, I got clean when I was 17, right? So all the mistakes that I've made, I'll be 45 this year, all the mistakes that I've made here in Narcotics Anonymous. And I have not necessarily always felt free enough to share where I was. And as some of the questions are being read, I'm like reflecting back, and there's some stuff that I'm like, oh, I can share on this. And then there's some stuff that I'm reflecting back, I'm like, I don't want to share this with everybody because I have shame. And so for the next 2 minutes, that's probably what I'm going to share with you guys, right? So I had a sponsee, the guy who I sponsored who stayed clean for 6 years. He got loaded and he left Narcotics Anonymous. We stayed in contact. He asked me to be the best man at his wedding. And I said, yes. He was married to another girl who used to be in the fellowship. They were both using, and he wasn't around. And so neither one of them were around. And we were getting fitted for his tux, and he was like, I feel so close to you, blah, 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 blah. Here's the deal. At the end of the day, I ended up having sex with the guy who I used to sponsor, who was no longer around the fellowship. And I had every kind of rationalization, justification for it, because he wasn't around anymore, blah, 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 so on and so forth. And I was honest with my sponsor about it. And so when that question got asked, I felt a sense of shame and didn't want to share that, right? The truth is that there have, especially my first probably 10, 15 years clean, I just had such a persona that I was like perfect, and I had to be perfect in recovery because I worked the steps, because I was in service, because I sponsored people. And so my behavior was predatory, but it was not disruptive because no one fucking knew, right? Because I had because no one knew, I could judge other people. And this is what I know, is that the most judgmental people are probably living and the behavior that they are judging other people to live for, because that is my experience. And I used to be in a place to where it was my job that I felt to carry the message to the end, but this is what my place in our fellowship is, right? When I see that predator, when I see that person who's been called out, right, and the term is predator, I feel like it relates to all of us, right? Because it's not just sexually we're predators, right? Some of us, like Mike was sharing about, borrow money from newcomers. Some of us borrow money from people.
some of us are just, you know, we just do some shit. This is my place, right? My place, since I've been through what I've been through, is to be there for the addict who feels too ashamed to walk into their meeting because they have fucked some shit up. That's my place. And I've had to listen to some people, man, through the years, getting honest about my own behavior. Even right now, it just feels uncomfortable sharing about it. But getting honest about my own behavior, I've had friends, and I still have friends, who are honest enough to tell me the truth about myself. And I'm open to listening to it. Right? I'm open to listening to the truth about myself. And I've grown, and I faced the traumas that led me to do that shit. And if you don't want to confront your issues, you don't have to. The fellowship will confront them for you. That is for sure. Right? And so that's kind of like what I have to say about that, is I feel like there's a predator on some level that lives in each and every single one of us. We have unresolved experiences. The difference is that there are those of us who come in, work the steps, and work through them. And there are those of us who will never look at the things that we do. And we will stay clean and miserable and continue to prey on other people. And the people that we prey on will get better. But we may not.
Do you still use a form of abuse
to anyone today? Do you still use a form of abuse to anyone today? Well, I don't know. If I have, let me know. Sometimes my words are abusive, I think, or they're taken that way. Sometimes I don't even mean it, and it comes out in a way that's not helpful. But I'm pretty aware today that my words can hurt somebody. I'd rather you whoop my ass physically than say some shit to me that I'm going to tote around for a while. I learned how to take an ass whooping when I was a little bit of a kid. But if you say some stuff to me, I may tote that the rest of my life and believe it. So they say don't take things personal. Sometimes it is personal. I've gotten very personal with my abuse in the past. I'm trying real hard to learn how to pause. And think about, you know, probably the first thing I need to say is not the first thing that comes to my mind. Watch my tone. I'm almost deaf, so I talk really loud. And so I had to tone it back, you know, because I know that people can take that as aggression. So, I mean, I've had to do some work on that, because I was very abusive when I came. We were very intolerant. You didn't say the word sober to fucking people with me. Because I would shame the fuck out of it. And, very intolerant. People say, you can't run that way off bullshit. Your words can make it unsafe for people to come in a meeting and get the message from somebody that's learned. And so I hope that I'm not being abusive today. Even though y'all bet them really fucked up, stupid ass questions. I say that with all the love in my heart. Thanks, Linda Schiffman.
I didn't pick this question. Mason handed it to me. Can you stay clean if you do not believe in God? And there is, when I was new, I really struggled with it. And some of it's because of childhood sexual abuse and coming up in a Catholic family and really struggling with the God stuff. And I had a sponsor that pointed me to the story in the fifth edition basic text that was written by an atheist. And that was Up From Down Under. There's a new wonderful story in the basic text called Atheists Recover 2. Shameless plug for the Living Clean podcast. It'll be dropping tomorrow. We interviewed the author. And in that, he was talking about, you know, like prayer as a way of life, rather, you know, like as he practices spiritual principles. And I thought that was kind of cool. You know, I do think that there's people, I think you can't stay clean if you don't believe in God. Absolutely. There's room for everyone in this tent, you know, regardless of all the differences, including belief. I was gonna pass on taking a question so I could answer one of the previous questions, so I'm gonna dip into that real fast. There was a reunification question. I worked for Children's Services for a little while, and I've seen a lot of people lose their kids, and I've seen a lot of those people reunify with their kids, you know, like because there's something that's greater than ourselves out there. That's the opposite of this question. You know, that there is something greater than ourselves out there that's greater than CTS. You know, like kids do come back, you know, and so hang in there. I think there was this question about predatory behavior and like not, you know, like I think we do recover. You know, like I think there is a predator inside, but I also think that like there's something greater than that that's happening here and that we do recover. And I was afforded this opportunity that really I didn't have a choice. She told me I was her sponsor, and she was the first person that I worked all 12 steps with. And I didn't trust myself, but she trusted me. And in that, like I came to believe in myself that this, like the speaker last night was saying that there are no gay addicts. And I'm like, well, there aren't any of those differences. We're just addicts. And if you do have some belief in something greater than yourself, more than the disease of addiction, you know, like that can potentially overcome all those differences. Thanks.
Thank you, Francis.
So I have a little bit of a confusing question, I think. It says, when in recovery, is working the steps the only thing to work on? And I really keep honing into this only thing. The steps for me have been the answer to everything in my life. So it says when in recovery, is working the steps the only thing to work on? I really, you know, only, you know? Recovery for me is an act of change in my attitudes and ideas. And the only way that I'm able to change my attitudes and ideas is by working the steps and practicing the principles contained in the steps. So whatever it is that I'm, you know, quote, working on, the solution is in the steps. You know, anybody that heard me share the other day, I've gone through the steps quite a few times, and every time I've gone through them, I've used them to go get through some other area of my life. I just wrapped up a round of concepts. I'm starting my next round of steps, and I'm starting it with my this round of steps. I'm focusing on what I bring to the interpersonal relationships of the members of Narcotics Anonymous. I want to not need you to like me. I want to be able to sit in a room and have somebody give me a dirty look and know that's not a reflection of me. I'm not there. So I'm gonna do a round of steps to work on some self-esteem, to work on some self-worth, to work on believing in myself the way that you told me that you believed in me. You tell me every meeting that you believe in me and wanna help me in my recovery, and for some reason I still sit here and think, no, not you, you don't even. So I'm worth that. And so by working the steps, I'm able to work on all the things. It's not just the only thing, it's everything.
All right, the question I got, are you still going to meetings and not hear the message? So I'm also a little hung up on this one as well, because yes, I still go to meetings. And I think it's important to express that like recovery is a journey. So like in the 15 years that I've been here, the amount of times that I go to meetings and like my cadence has changed over the years. I've had shift changes, job changes, you know, three babies. And so, like, I remember when I was first here, I was like, oh, I go to a meeting every single day. It's like, but I didn't have kids, right? And I didn't have a wife. And I also didn't have a job. And so it made sense that I went to a meeting every day, and then I went to all the new meetings. But then it progresses over time, right? And I remember I had three children at home under the age of two, and that wasn't seven meetings a week. It just wasn't. But I still had to make meetings a priority. And what was really important is that when that started to change and let up, that I didn't continue to just go to one or two. And that's where I got caught up in that rut of like, well, two's working, you know? And I had to be willing to go into that new part of the journey. But this part of not hear the message, man, when I got here, my disease disqualified me so much. Like, everything everybody said was different. Like, it still happens today that, like, when my disease is really active, it's hard to hear the message, man. I'll listen to the messenger and be like, I'm different than this messenger. Or this messenger does this and does that. So how am I going to hear that? And I remember coming to meetings, and I would go to meetings, and all I would hear was people talking about crack. I would just hear crack, crack. And they could share a message, but I would just hear crack, 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 right? And then I'd go to these other meetings in Great Bridge, and these little old ladies were talking about prescription pills, and I was like, man, I guess Narcotics Anonymous is for people that do prescription pills. And I guess Narcotics Anonymous is people that smoke crack, right? And so I'm going to meetings, and I'm hearing crack, 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 and I remember going, well, I mean, I do not smoke crack on a regular basis, right? Like, that's my disease, man. Like, I smoked crack, right? But my disease told me I didn't. So, and I know that we don't name specific drugs in here, but I use that as an example to say, like, keep coming back. My disease will disqualify and hold on to things, and it's important for me to hear the message and not just hang on to someone saying crack.
Thank you, Jess. Okay. This is probably not the question for me, but why do y'all have so much beef with AA? I don't give a fuck where you recover, just recover. Okay? I don't care if you're touching Narcotics Anonymous and saying it's sober, we'll figure it out later. Sit in your chair and say it. I don't care, you're here. So let me preface that with, there's a history. We didn't get here. Jimmy K didn't get here because he thought we should have 12 steps. So I have to remember, I got to be here because of AA. I don't talk about it in Narcotics Anonymous meeting. I don't say that I'm sober, but I was an addict and alcoholic for 18 months, in my first 18 months, because that's what my treatment center told me I was. Until somebody pulled me aside very lovingly and said, we don't say that here, we're addicts and that covers everything. So y'all having a beef with AA is not me. I don't have a beef with AA. And also, I will say that when I got clean, there was a basic text and there was the Just for Today meditation book. That's all we had. Any other literature that I wanted to read either had to be from another program or I had to wait for it to get published in 1998, in 1996. In the beginning of the basic text, it talks about the spirit of cooperation with Alcoholics Anonymous. I am very passionate about this because I don't want to shame anybody out of Narcotics Anonymous because they say the wrong words. I don't want to shame anybody into telling them that they're wrong. I want to educate them and love them and show them how we do it. This is my home. If I happen to end up in an AA meeting somewhere, I respect the house that I'm in. There's no such thing as an NA purist, guys. We didn't get here by ourselves. We didn't. We just didn't. But you respect where you are. It's the literature that I read. It's what I live by here. And that's a choice. And there's all kinds of people that say they're bisexual and they do this. They can do that. We're allowed to do whatever we want here. But I respect the house that I'm in. And I just want to say that if we forget where we come from and how we got here, like, we're fucked, you know? So listen, if you don't like AA and you don't believe in being sober, good for you. I don't either. I believe that I'm an addict and I'm clean and I'm in the process of recovery. But my dad got sober in AA and he stayed sober till the day he died. So I'm grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous because he had a drinking problem. I have a I like everything problem. I want a feel good problem, you know? So maybe I was the right person to answer this question. I'm not 100% sure. If you think you're an NA purist, like, look into the history and see how we got here. If you think Narcotics Anonymous is home for you, wonderful. That's what we want here. We want this to be home for you. But I don't want to shame anybody out of here. I don't want to scare anybody. I don't want to use language that says that you're wrong or that you're bad or that you're doing it wrong. We get here, we sit in our chair, and we figure it out. And as somebody that, I'm not an old time, I'm a more experienced member.
Oh, say it.
I'm a long timer, yes, that's what I am. Or predecessor, whatever. Oh,
class of 92.
Well, I'm not a predecessor. But anyway, my point to all of this is that as someone that has been here and has watched the evolution of what we've been able to do in this fellowship, I am grateful that I get to sit here and say this. What I'm also grateful for is the ability to be open-minded to the possibility that it ain't just about me in this room, that there's a whole other story that goes along with Narcotics Anonymous. And if I forget about that, then I lose the purpose that we have here.
Can we drop the mic for a moment on that? Okay. We was over there talking about that, and the term predecessor.
Talk about it. Buddy.
That it talks about in our traditions, mm-hmm. is talking to AA members.
Yes,
because
it is.
Before 1950, AA did not have traditions. Yes. When they adopted traditions in 1950, Narcotics Anonymous in 1953 was the first fellowship to come in existence with 12 steps and 12 traditions. Because we didn't want to make the mistake that our predecessors had made in doing some things. Just to add to that, because there's nothing else to say. The rest of the information is in our basic text in the introduction. What does regardless mean to you? Exactly what it says. Regardless. May I be blunt? We don't give a damn how you got here. We don't give a damn what you did. We don't care who you did it with, where you did it with, who you did it with. Well, I came from the judge. Thank you. Tell the judge hello. I was court ordered. Well, I don't give a damn. What do you want to do about your problem? How can we help? Because we'll always find a way to put a condition to get ourselves up out of here. But I need to find out what the commonalities are, because there's a commonality in pain. And there's a commonality in bottoms. And there's a commonality in having some things happen in active addiction that got me in here. So I'll need to look at all the differences around here. Everybody's welcome. I had 3 years clean. I went to a meeting in Nashville, Tennessee, and I was booed at the meeting. I was booed at the meeting because being a man of color in Old Hickory, Tennessee, they didn't see being of color in Old Hickory, Tennessee meetings. They booed because they seen me at meetings in Madison, North Nashville, South Nashville, East Nashville. I never got out to Old Hickory because it was too damn far to go. But when I got there, that boo was, you need to be here because other people that see things without feeling them need to see that they are welcome in this fellowship. So I got to go beyond my own personal boundaries and reach out and go to those places. I'm a black guy that wears the Bill overalls, right? Because when I started going to urban meetings, because of the way I talk, I didn't sound black enough. So I went to the Ford truck meetings. And I went to the stock car meetings. And I went to the dip snuff meetings and felt welcome. And now I go to any damn meeting I want to. And I'm comfortable anywhere I go. Because when I walk in to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, I hear those readings, it lets me know that I'm part of something that's bigger than me. Thanks.
I'm Adam, my name's Charles.
Charles.
Y'all just want me to get vulnerable up here, don't you? Have you hurt someone in recovery? I feel like I just shared that. But I have to put it to like recently, you know, and actually I've had an opportunity to grow here recently. So since I've been clean, sponsorship's always been one of the biggest ways that I've done service here, right? And I'm like comparing my relationship, because I had an opportunity to hurt someone, right? Because I was hurt just recently. So like, I take a special interest in, like, I'm not like one of these sponsors that are like, oh, I'm never gonna record me every day. And then, you know, they call, you ever had somebody tell you call them every day and then they don't fucking pick up the phone? Well, like, I don't do that. If you call me every day, some people ask me to sponsor them and they don't think it's gonna be that way. They think they're gonna call and they're gonna be like, oh, well, we're never gonna talk. And like, no, that's not, like, hey, I'm involved, right? And so like for my first 15 years or so, I had these like relationships with guys that I sponsored that were kind of unhealthy. It was hurt. Right? My sponsor's wife says we tend to sponsor out of our own issues. And so, like, they would do something that to hurt me and I would punish them. And I would punish them by being passive aggressive and not returning the phone call. And what happens is when somebody loves you and respects you, and we respect our sponsors. Like, some of us put them on a pedestal, regardless. It happens. You can tell people not to. And so, anyway, so I've worked really hard to not do that. And so recently I had a sponsee hurt my feelings, like hurt me. Like we're talking and it was about a convention. I said, oh, are you going to this convention? And he would continue to say, yeah. And then I talked to one of the other guys that I sponsored. He'd be like, he's not going to this convention. But every time I talked to him, he'd tell me yes. Well, he was people pleasing because he was afraid to tell me no. And I felt like, I was like, man, we're supposed to be close and you can't even tell me no. And then he got mad at me and then he didn't call me for 2 weeks. When we talk every day. So now I have an option, right? I can either play his game and say, well, I'm not gonna fucking answer the phone when you call me. Because that's some shit I used to do again 10, 12 years ago, right? And, or I can show him how to have a healthy relationship and how to work through conflict and how to work through differences, right? And like it talks about in The Living Clean, that our issues come out in our relationships, and it says nowhere do you see where we have grown and how much we haven't grown than in the area of relationships. And that's not just talking about sexual relationships. Some of the closest relationships I have are my friendships and the relationships I have through sponsorship, and those are some of the ones that I can act an ass in because my issues come out, my insecurities come out, my fear of abandonment comes out. Right? And so recently I had the opportunity to hurt someone without even knowing it, and like I was able to practice recovery, man. When your insecurities are up, when my insecurities are on the line, like that's when my defects come out. And so, yeah, so have I hurt someone many times? Am I doing it now? Not today.
Thank you, Charles.
All right. What about this panel? Give them a hand. Yeah. Do you want to say something real quick?
I just want to say something really fast. If I know that this is anonymous, but if you were the person that put in the question about the reunification and you feel like you didn't get an answer, I have the perfect person for you to talk to. Mm-hmm. If you're comfortable, please come find me and I will find somebody that knows what you're feeling.
Right. Yeah. Thank you. Okay, let's circle up and close. The auction starts here in about 15 minutes.
Thank you, Mason.
Yep. Thanks, Mason.
That's great.
Did I say crack too much?
Crack.
Real shit.
Crack.